Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
Well, hey, good morning, church. Real quick, before we get started, announcement for you. As you probably know, next weekend is Labor Day weekend, which means it's going to be a long weekend for some of you. You're going to go on a vacation, maybe, you know, you're going to go visit some family, or you got family coming in town to you, or you're going to the lake, or you're just going to lay out in the sun and do a whole lot of nothing. Resting, relaxing, recharging, reconnecting. I personally think that's a good thing. I think it's a really good thing. We run really fast in our culture, and this church especially is a really, really busy church. And so when we get weekends like that to just take a deep breath, I want you to take a deep breath, which is why we are changing our service times next weekend, as we've done a lot over the course of last year on holiday weekends. And we're moving our Saturday night service to Thursday night. Saturday night service is being, there's no Saturday night service next weekend, okay? We're moving our Saturday night service to Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. I'll be here, 6:30 p.m. And you know, the challenge for you is to still connect with your church family, all right? You got the weekend now to be able to rest, relax, recharge, do what you got to do, and you got your Thursday night to be able to come and get with us. Same scheduled service times on Sunday morning as normal, 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. here at the Brownsboro, 10 a.m. at Clifton, but Saturday is moved to Thursday. So you got no excuse. Okay, now, with that said, this is a really important sermon series we're in. And so, like, you hit the Thursday, because right now, we are in week 3 of a 5-week series we've been doing called Move. Move. It's been this future-defining dream series for us. And really, the reason why we titled it Move is because we hope everybody in our congregation will choose to move. If you guys remember, in the promotion leading up to this series, I asked something that I've never asked of our church since I've been here. I asked for everybody who calls this place their church home to commit to mandatory attendance. We're taking attendance. There's cameras, okay? Like, mandatory attendance through this. If you can be here in the room, great. If you can't, join us in our online audience, because we as a church have some big, bold, brave, 100,000-mile, 100,000-step dreams that we want to accomplish together. And we understand that we will not accomplish them unless we individually take steps together. You see, you know what the biggest threat is to your dreams and to our church's dreams? Okay, that would be you. You are, and I am, because you are in your dreams, I am in my dreams, and we are in the collective dreams of our church. And our dreams as a church will only become as concrete as you and I are committed to those dreams. See, you know the only way to materialize a 100,000-step dream? It's by taking 100,000 steps. It's hard work. Okay, there's no shortcut. There's just a first step, and the next step, and the next step, and the next step after that. And so that's what this series is challenging. It's challenging all of us to take steps together toward God's future for us. Let's create the future here. Now, check this out. The thing that's so backwards, though, about this series is that in this dream, you know, oriented vision series, we're not actually laying out our future vision or destination as a church. That's what you hear a lot of times when, like, a leader stands up and they talk about the vision of the organization or something. They'll point to where they're going, right? And then they'll give strategies to get there. That's not what we're doing here. Because, you see, we believe that no matter what God holds for us in the future, that actually doesn't change our path to get there as a church. Interesting. It's backwards, though. That's so backwards for those of you who work in the corporate world or in organizational contexts where you're constantly going through these planning cycles where you set the vision, create strategy. Set the vision, create strategy. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's wise leadership in your context. I'm just saying in my context, the context of church, we believe that strategy doesn't lead to success, but rather Jesus does. Or said differently, Jesus is a strategy. Following Jesus is the strategy. Creating our future together is as simple as following Jesus together. Because you see, while we may not know what God has for us in the future, what we do know for a fact is the path to get there. And that is the path that follows one step at a time behind Jesus. See, God didn't give us so much as a plan to run as he gave us a path to run. to walk and a person to follow. And that person has a name, and his name is Jesus. And if we follow Jesus, we're going to end up exactly where God wants us. And that's good news. Now, if you were to ask me, okay, Tyler, I get it, follow Jesus, great. Okay, so what does that look like? What does that look like for us to follow Jesus? Well, as you heard me say over the last 3 weeks, I believe I can sum up just about everything Jesus calls his followers to do in three different practices. Talked about generosity in week one, talked about servanthood last week. Today, we're going to talk about community. Before I get into community, I want to allow you a chance to see around the corner. Because this sermon series doesn't end today. There's actually two more weeks to it. We got week four and week five ahead. In week four, we're actually going to do a Bible study, which will be a little bit different than what our normal sermons are in here, but it's going to be a more focused Bible study in which we ask ourselves the question, according to Jesus, what was the requirements to be one of his followers? And it'll help frame up our discussion. And then in week five, we're going to come back and we're going to have a commitment service together where everyone who calls Northeast their home is going to be challenged to commit to each one of these three at some level. Now, if you've been following with us, each one of these sermons on each one of these three, we've laid out different levels for them, different levels of commitment. You guys remember? Like there was level one generosity, level two, level three, level one servanthood, two and three. Today there will be level one, two, and three, community. And in the commitment sermon at the end of this, we're just going to ask you, whatever level you feel God is guiding you towards, we want you to commit therein. And the beautiful thing about this commitment service is that everybody's going to, like, it's kind of flexible, right? Because everybody's going to be able to commit at their own pace. See, like, for some of you, on that day, you're just going to be, like, a level one commitment across the board because you're new to this. And you're like, all right, I'm just sticking my toe in the water. For some of you, you are already level three all the way across the board. You're, like, one of our core people at this church. And so you're just going to be, like, check in the box. But some of you are going to be, like, a 2-1-3. Some of you are going to be, like, a 1-2-3, a 3-2-1. It's going to be cool. Okay, but I'm getting ahead of myself, all right? I just want you to know there's some exciting things to come up. Today, though, I want to finish our three practices by talking about community. Now, check this out. I believe that we have a community problem in our culture today. We are experiencing what I would call the dissolution of community in our country today. Basically, people in our country are starved for connection. They are starved for belonging, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because there are more people on the planet Earth today to connect with than ever before. And we are more connected on the planet Earth today than ever before. And yet, while we are the most connected generation ever, statistics show us we are also the loneliest generation ever at the same time. Why? Why? Well, I would suggest to you at the root of that are three core problems. The first one is this. In our culture, we settle for shallow community. We settle for shallow community. Now, there's lots of examples of that, but maybe the two that are most prevalent and prominent in your life are digital connection and political tribes. Both forms of community, but I would suggest to you, shallow community. You probably noticed with the innovation of social media platforms over the last several years, we are now connected with millions upon millions upon millions of people all around the world, real time, right? But it's shallow connection. It's shallow community because when you connect with someone else on a social media platform, you're not connecting with the whole them. You're not connecting with the real them. Usually, you're connected with a curated version of them. You're connected with a filtered, censored, sanitized, living my best life, highlight reel version of them. And it's hard to make a real connection through a highlight reel platform, isn't it? Now, check this out. On top of that, I believe these little pocket screens are stealing our attention and presence because we've become so addicted to them. There's been research already done on the addictive qualities of screens, and we just go to them. Have you ever noticed how you just pull your phone out of your pocket and check it, you pull it out and check it, you pull it out and check it, and you check it? Right? Nope, you're not expecting a call. Didn't vibrate, all right? You're just pulling out your phone and checking it. Sometimes you're flipping through Facebook, and you're like, I was just doing this 5 minutes ago. You ever notice that? The average American checks their phone 80 times a day. The average millennial, 150. And if you say wow to that, and you're like, oh, I don't believe that at all, I challenge you. Download one of those apps that counts how many times you unlock your phone today, and it might surprise you. I did it about 3 months ago, and it was terrifying to me. Like, seriously, terrifying to me how many times I pulled out my phone and how much time I spent on my phone. We're addicts. Things are like pacifiers to us. You get sad. What do? Rather than connecting with a friend, you air your grievances online. You get bored. What do? Rather than going on an adventure with a friend, you turn on season 3. You're at a meeting or the table and you got a chance to work together or get to know others better. And what do? You put your phone on the table face up. Look, I love digital technology. I'm so thankful for the perks it's added to our lives and how it's pushed us forward. But let's acknowledge it. It's stealing our presence. It's stealing our attention. Every second you spend face to screens, another second you can't spend face to face. And it's shallow community. Same thing for political tribes. Okay, so I know you haven't noticed. But in our country today, there's this sort of political division that's happening. Political sorting, if you will. We're ripping at the seams. And it's not just on ideological lines. It's also on geographical lines. We're basically living different lives in different spaces now. Two countries mixed together in one country. Statistics show us that these like different political parties live in different places, watch different TV stations, different news channels. They celebrate national holidays and national symbols differently, go to different churches. Now, you would think that since we found our political tribes and we've got all this stuff to agree on, you would think that there would at least be some level of connection there. At least we could find some friends therein and we wouldn't be lonely anymore with our people. But again, the statistics show that that's not what's happening. Statistics show that while political sorting is at a higher rate than ever before, so is loneliness. So check this out. In 1976, less than 25% of Americans lived in places where the presidential election was a landslide. Compare that to 2016. In 2016, 80% of U.S. counties were landslide victories for either Trump or Clinton. Now, how does that compare with loneliness statistics? Well, in 1980, 20% of Americans reported feeling lonely. And today, it's more than double that. So that's not working either, is it? Why? Why? I would suggest to you that our political tribes are oftentimes shallow tribes because they synergize us not around who we love or what we're for, but rather they synergize us around who we hate and what we're against. And if a community's built around hate, there's not going to be any connection there. It's shallow community. Here's the second issue that's pulling us apart. Second, we settle for shallow community. And two, we seek life from the lifeless. You noticed how connected and focused people are on their stuff in our culture? We're seeking life from that which has no life. We're one of the most wealthy and affluent countries on the planet Earth, in the history of the planet Earth. Medicine and technology has taken us further than we ever could have imagined, right? Life expectancies are longer, food tastes better, sex is more available. Luxuries are more luxurious and accessible to all. What a time to be alive. But is it giving us life? Is it? You see, I think that would be a really, really hard thing to argue for. Because when you read the diaries and journals and look at the art of our time, listen to the public outcry, we are far more discouraged and far more disenchanted and far more lonely and far more discontent than many less fortunate cultures and countries to come before us. Why? Why? Because we're seeking life from the lifeless. We're trying to get life from that which has none. But look, y'all, if you want a surge of life, you got to plug into life, right? Third issue. That I found is this. In our culture, we believe our identity should be individual. Three, we believe our identity should be individual. Now, this is a much deeper sociological conversation, but let me sum it up like this. In our day, you'll hear like these common mantras spoken. Sometimes on TV shows, you know, sometimes we teach our kids these things because they just sound noble and they sound true. Here's a few examples of them. In our culture, you hear things like, well, to find yourself, look within yourself. Or just follow your heart. Just be you. Ever heard that? Ever said that before? Now, check this out. Let's just acknowledge the partial truth in this, okay? Because there's partial truth in here. You know what the partial truth is? We are all unique. And that is so true and so real. In fact, if we want to live satisfying, full lives, then part of what we must do as human beings is discover our uniqueness, get comfortable with our uniqueness, and then leverage our uniqueness for the good of God and the good of others. That's true. However, did you notice the common thread in all three of these mantras? Did you notice it? I made it pretty hard to miss. Did you notice it? See, the common thread in all three of these is you. 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 Your way, your feelings, your truth, you do you. You know, you is what's best for you. And you doing you is what's best for everyone else. No wonder we're starving for connection. Anytime I do a wedding ceremony, I got the couple standing in front of me, I always say to them some sort of the same thing. I always tell them, hey, if you are both in this for you, then the two will always remain two and it'll never become one. And the goal of marriage is for the two to become one, right? So the worst question you could ask yourself in a marriage is, who should they be to make this work for me? And the best question you could ask yourself in marriage is, who should I be to make this work for them? But as long as you are in it for you, the two will always remain two. You with me? Now, if that's true of a marriage, and that's true of a friendship, that's true of a church community, it's true of a national community. But that's not where we're at, right? This is where we're at. And I'll go ahead and tell you, this is the problem. We were not hardwired and we were not created for this. We're created for something more. In fact, what if we were hardwired for deep community, not shallow community, like face-to-face intimacy? And what if healthy community actually means uniting around who you love rather than who you hate? And what if we're hardwired to get life from other life? I mean, what if the quality of our lives isn't really about the quality of our relationships, or is about the quality of our relationships rather than the quantity of our stuff? You with me? And what if communities thrive when people build a collective identity rather than individual ones? What if the healthiest community out there are those where people say, I'm for you, not for me, but I'm for we. I'm for us. You see, doesn't that resonate with your heart? Isn't there something that just seems right about that? That's because I believe you were created for that. That's what the Bible teaches. And that's actually what human biology teaches. One researcher from the University of Chicago who spent over 20 years researching loneliness, I reported this one recently. Humans are social species. We're social. Our neural, hormonal, and genetic makeup support interdependence over independence. The biological machinery of our brains warns us when our ability to prosper is threatened. So, for example, hunger is a warning our blood sugar is low and we need to eat. Thirst warns us we need a drink in order to avoid dehydration. Pain alerts us to potential tissue damage. And loneliness tells us we need social connection. Something as critical as food and water. Other researchers went on to report that living with air pollution increases your odds of dying early by 5%. Living with obesity, 20%. Excessive drinking, 30%. And loneliness, 45%. In-person interactions bolster our immune system. They send positive hormones surging through our bloodstream and our brain, and they help us live longer. Research shows playing cards once a week or meeting friends every Wednesday for coffee adds as many years to our lives as taking beta blockers or quitting a pack-a-day smoking habit. In short, building community is a matter of life or death. Deep community. It is essential to our humanity. And that's why I would advise you in those moments when you feel most distant from people, those are the moments when you need to find your people. Now, with the dissolution of community in our broader culture, you know what I've found is that it started to spill over into the church. And so people are less engaged in their church communities today than ever before. And there's lots of reasons why. Some of them are good reasons, some of them are bad reasons, but they're reasons nonetheless. For example, our world's flatter today, right? So our jobs send us traveling every weekend, or our jobs will relocate us away from family or away from the hometown. And so a lot of us will spend weekends traveling home or taking our kids to see the grandparents or going to see the grandkids, right? We'll spend the weekends on the road. And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a reality. Our world's more affluent, particularly our country. So people have second homes, are able to afford vacations, right? And we're just bouncing to the lake back and forth all summer. We're making sure we use that boat. We invested all that money in, and before you know it, we're dislocated, right, from our local church community. Weekend activities today for kids do not respect Sunday morning anymore as sacred space, right? Soccer games, baseball games popping off 8, 9 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Oh, and what about the innovation of online church? I think it's awesome. Good morning, online audience, right? It's awesome as a supplement to your local church community, but not as an excuse to continuously and consistently unplug from a local church community. I think for a lot of Christians, the issue goes even deeper than that, though, because they've been hurt by the church. Or they're frustrated with the church. Or there are segments of the church that they just can't stand with. Or people in the church who have hurt their feelings. Or maybe their church has just become boring and too old-fashioned for them. And so they disengage. I hear it so often, especially from folks my age. I have a relationship with Jesus, but I just don't go to church. Now, whatever your reasoning is for disengaging, I'm sure it's a good reason. Honestly, I trust that. Trust you. But for the committed Jesus follower, there's really only one question that matters. And that question is this. Would Jesus be in favor of a churchless Christianity? Now, I think not. See, the church came from God's mind, and it was birthed out of Jesus' commission. In Acts chapter 1, Jesus commissions his best friends, then he ascends to heaven. And no more than a chapter later, what do you see his best friends doing? Building the church. And you'd think if anybody knew what Jesus wanted best, it would be his best friends who spent years of their lives learning from him, right? Immediately. What are they doing? They're building up the church community. There's this iconic passage in Acts chapter 2 that I try to circle back to at least once a year here because it's so huge. It gives us a vision of what that earliest church community was like. Okay, 2,000 years later, here we are on the other side of the world. We'll have somewhere between 3,000 to 4,000 people gathered here this weekend. And yet Acts chapter 2 gives us a picture of 2,000 years ago of what those first 3,000 or so people were doing. And it's beautiful to just catch a glimpse of the forerunners and founding fathers and mothers of our faith and see what they were all about. I'm going to read that passage to you just to remind us of it continuously. Check this out. Acts chapter 2, picking up in verse 42. The scriptures tell us that all the believers, how many? That would be all, right? Okay, do you know what all means in the Greek, by the way? That would be all. Okay. All the believers, like 70% of the believers. No, all, 100%, all the believers, all devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings. That's like the New Testament teaching that we do on the weekends. And to fellowship. It's this idea of a community of close, tight-knit relationships. And to sharing in meals. How did they eat their meals? They shared in them together. Did they eat their meals alone in front of season 3? No. Imagine they got with other people and they shared in them. They shared also in the Lord's Supper, which is communion time that we have every week where we remember Jesus' death. Oh, and they shared in prayer too. Wait, you're telling me they didn't just pray in a little quiet time by themselves in their office in the morning and then like take a picture of my Bible open and put it in on Instagram, hashtag holy moment? They might have. They might have. Acts 2 just doesn't tell us that. Doesn't tell us about an individual quiet time. It tells us about how they shared together in prayer. It says a deep sense of awe came over them all. Wow. And the apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders. And all the believers, there it is again. How many all met? How did they meet? Together. They met together in one place and they shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. And they worshiped together at the temple each day. How often? Each day. You tell me they didn't just gather on Sunday mornings? Nope. You tell me they didn't just gather on Sunday mornings and then again on Wednesday nights for snack supper like real Christians do it? Nope. You tell me they didn't do the Sunday mornings and the Wednesday nights and the Saturday morning men's Bible studies? Nope. If that's you, you're only 3/7 of the way there. So they worship together at the temple each day. Together. Gosh, they liked each other. They also met in homes for the Lord's Supper. They shared their meals with great joy and generosity. Love how the passage emphasizes eating. And all the while, they're praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day, the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. There's that word again, fellowship, this community of close, tight-knit relationships. Now, quick reflection, y'all. Does this sound like a deep community or a shallow community to you? Does it sound like a community that neglected face-to-face interaction? Does it sound like a community that was synergized around who they hate or who they love, what they're against or what they were for? Does it sound like a community that got life from their stuff, like held on to their stuff with all their might, or instead leveraged their stuff to give life to others? And does this sound like a community that took pride most in their individual identities or in their collective identity and their common intention and their common love and their common God? Well, the answer to that is just so obvious when you read it. You know, in my life, I probably heard 100 sermons on this passage right here because it's that important, it's that iconic, it's this glimpse of the first church. But here's what's interesting. In pretty much all of the sermons I've ever heard on it, the preacher will stand on stage, and what he'll do with this passage is he'll point out the practices of the early church in it. So don't you see what they practiced? They gathered for the apostles' teaching, so you need to have apostles' teaching. There was fellowship. There was this, the communion and eating, get prayer. And so we must do these different practices that the early church did. And that's fine. That's good. It's good to notice the practices. But guys, I don't think that's the main point of the passage. In fact, if you think that's the main point of passage, I think you might be missing the point. See, this passage isn't as much about what the early church did as it is about how they did what they did. And how did they do it? Together. All the churchy stuff, together. The early church did life together. See, church was not an intrusion on life for them. Rather, life was an intrusion on church. Or perhaps I could say being the church was life for the early church. That's what I would say to you, that the community formula that we see in the New Testament looks something like this. It's family together. Family together. Because they did everything together. And the New Testament over and over refers to the church as a family. We're the family of God. You know, God's the Father. Jesus is the Son. We're adopted in. The Holy Spirit's the counselor, and God knows we need a counselor sometimes, and we're brothers and sisters united by blood. Whose blood? Jesus' blood. Jesus says it like this in Matthew chapter 12. He says, "Who's my mother and who are my brothers?" And then he pointed to his disciples. I said, look, there are my mothers and brothers. Anyone who does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Apostle Paul says it like this, Ephesians 2, Galatians 6. He says, "You are citizens along with all of God's holy people. You are members of God's family. Together we're his house, and the cornerstone is Christ Jesus himself. Whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone, especially to those in the family of faith." Now, we're a family. And if we are, in fact, a family, then I just want to remind you of a couple things you might have forgotten about how families work. All right? So first off, you don't get to choose your family. And I know some of you wish you got to choose your family. I know some of you wish you could unchoose your family, or at least certain members of the family. But that's just not how it works. And so disengaging from the church because somebody annoys you, or somebody stands against you, or what, or somebody's, you know, hurt your feelings, or whatever it may be, okay, that'd be like not showing up at Thanksgiving or Christmas or any of the family gatherings because of your crazy uncle. Now, we know he's crazy, and we know you would like to unchoose him. We know he thinks he knows everything about everything, politics, theology, how you should raise your kids. And with every sip of the Christmas punch, he gets more belligerent and outspoken, right? I get it. He's a jerk. But how fair is it to your mom and dad to ghost them because of your crazy uncle? It's not fair at all, right? That's not how healthy families work. So I got a better option for you. Here's an alternative. What if we looked at the church as a practice field for dealing with the difficult? Because there's a lot of difficult people to practice on in here. I'm just saying. I mean, we are called, in fact, to love the weird and creepy. And there are some weird and creepy people in here. We're called to love the idiot and the annoying. And there are some idiots and some really annoying people in here. No names mentioned. We're even called to love the sinner and the hypocrite. And you know, sometimes they give the sinner and the hypocrite the mic, okay? Let's check this out, y'all. If you can't love others here in Jesus' body, what makes you think you can do it anywhere else anyways? So let's start here within the family. Now, here's the second important thing I want you to know about family, okay? You don't get to choose your family, and two, your family didn't get to choose you either. Just want to remind you, oh, Mr. High and Mighty, oh, Miss High and Mighty that sticks your nose up on all those less enlightened church people who don't know Jesus like you know Jesus, and they're sinners, and they're mean, and they're hypocrites. Okay, we've already established that. There are weird, creepy, idiotic, you know, annoying hypocrites and sinners in the church, yes. But have you looked in the mirror lately? Because check this out. Sometimes I wonder why I would be a part of any group that would have me as a member. Because I got issues. And so do you. Now, check this out. That's the reason why some of you are here right now. Because you got issues. And you know how I know? Because you're here. It's the only time you show up. So when the issues show up. Okay, when life's going well, you love to take the reins from God and say, yeah, you know, and ride on. But when life takes a turn for the worse and it hits rock bottom and you got nowhere else to turn but Jesus, here you are, you're back. And look, there's no judgment here. I just want you to know, I'm glad to see you. I'm so glad that you chose to be here with us today. But I also want to point out that the church is here for you. Every Sunday, every day of the week, just pick up the phone and call. The church is here for you when life's a wreck or when you're at your worst or when you hit rock bottom. And so I want to challenge you, be there for others, church, when they're at their worst, when their lives are a wreck or when they hit rock bottom. Because that's what families do. I don't know if you saw this recently, but there was this series of races. It was the World Triathlon Series. And the championship race was in Cozumel, Mexico. Young man named Johnny Brownlee had the race won. He was coming down the final straightaway, 400 meters left. That's it, 400 meters left till the finish line. When all of a sudden he started to black out and stumble. In fact, it looked like he was gonna pass out into the crowd. Wasn't gonna be able to finish the race. In that moment, the guy who was in second realized that the gold was his. He'd been working his entire life for this goal. Only problem is the guy in second was Johnny's brother. And in that moment, Johnny's brother did what brothers do. Why don't you check this video out?
Second and third, but then less than 400 meters from the finishing line, unbelievable. Johnny Brownlee would start to find fatigue. He did not know where he was. And something that we've never seen before, Alistair Brownlee would help his brother to the finishing line. Henry Schumann could not believe his eyes. He would have himself an ability to get to the finish and win the grand final. The crowd absolutely could not believe what they were seeing. Henry Schumann, the man who had been the bronze medalist at the Olympic Games, would claim the grand final. What an incredible rock star season for Henry Schumann. And as he crossed the line, he would look back and not believe what he was seeing. The two Brownlee brothers trying to make their way to their finishing line with Richard Murray just seconds behind. And Alistair Brownlee would help the younger of the Brownlees in, push him across the line. It would be Johnny second, Alistair third.
You know what my favorite part of the video is? It's at the very end, he just throws him across the line. But it reminds me of Galatians chapter 2 and what Paul says to the church family. He says, bear one another's burdens, and in so doing, fulfill the law of Christ. Because that's what family does. So look, I know that you would carry me across the finish line. And I promise you, if I got to, I will throw you across the finish line. Promise. Because we're family. And look, that's so different than the way the world acts. Because you know what the world says? The world says, who should we fear and who should we blame? But here at the church, we say, who should we cheer and who should we love? Now, it's a big church. Over the course of any weekend, we'll have 3,000 to 4,000 people come through. I'll go ahead and tell you, if you don't make an effort to make this big church small, you'll never find your friends within the family, if you get what I'm saying. We have countless opportunities in order to help you move from the thousands to the hundreds, out of rows and into circles with others, but it's never going to happen unless you take advantage of them. Man, some of the most fruitful relationships I have in this church and some of the best growth experiences that I've had in this church has been in the context, not of this larger gathering, but in my smaller group. Now, real quick, I just want to let two of our rock stars, Rena and Rick, talk a little bit about their small group, because it has been life-changing for them, and I hope their story might encourage you. Check us out.
I'm wired for community. That's just who I am. I love being in community. I've always been involved. And then I met Rick.
Who's not wired for community.
For me, it was, it felt like a lonely walk because I was wanting to walk in Jesus's path.
We were that close to the end of our family life, the end of our marriage, and it took literally divine intervention. I was an atheist for the first 50 years of my life, and just 9 years ago, gave my life to Jesus.
Honestly, it was community that led us to Jesus.
We knew right from the get-go that we needed to find a church here and jump right into community.
It was a non-negotiable because we have been the beneficiaries of the gift of life through community. We wanted to continue to be able to give and receive that with others.
And we've been doing it ever since. We have a small group that is amazing. The people in it ranging in age from late 20s into their 60s with one-year-olds and up to grandchildren.
I really love the way our group came together. It was formed very organically at church, and we ended up being a group of very diverse couples. I think that gives us so much to offer to one another. Of course, our group is about prayer, and it's about being in the Word together. But it's also just about fellowship, about doing life together, getting to know each other intimately, not just what's going on in our lives, but what's going on in our hearts. And we may have very little in common with each other, but we learn to love each other. And that's really nice. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's like having family. Rena's family is over in the Philippines. My family's back in New York. Having this group of people here that we've become so close to, someone we can call at a moment's notice, text when we need to, is just a very beautiful thing.
That's who we are. That's our family. That's our Jesus family.
So I have three asks for you today, three levels I'd ask you to consider and move towards one. For those of you who've never stepped into the community at this church outside of the broader gathering, I'd ask you to consider level one community, which is attending a one-time large group event. And we got some great ones coming up. For women, we got the Women's Conference in September, whatever that weekend is around the 14th. It's going to be amazing. Guys, we've got our Men's Summit Conference, October 13. These are just great ways for you to move out of the thousands into the hundreds and start recognizing some faces and learning some names. Now, for those of you who are thinking, maybe I need a little more than that, I would encourage you to consider a level two community opportunity, consistent community, which is participating in a short-term community event. During the summer, we have our next level studies. We have Bible studies that pop off during different seasons all the time throughout the year. Our men's breakfast that meets regularly once a month. Our mom's connection group. There are so many opportunities for you to connect. And this allows you to go from the hundreds to the tens and not just start learning names, but also start learning some stories of some of the folks around you. Now, my hope for everybody in here is that you would consider jumping into level three community. That's a small group. You can skip levels if you want to and go straight to number three. Because in my humble opinion, I mean, you just saw an example of it in Rick and Rena's video. This right here, small group community, that's where Acts 2 happens. So I got to be honest. That video I just watched probably looks a whole lot more like Acts 2 than what this gathering looks like on many weekends. So if you really want to experience and taste and drink from the deep well of what God created as church, you gotta plug in to your friends within this broader family. Just this past Friday night, I was with my small group celebrating the baby shower of one of the couples in there. And I had this sermon in the back of my mind. And I started asking myself, what have we really, accomplished together as a group? Like, has it been all worth it, really? And then it hit me, man. Our group's been together for 3 years. We've been through 9 kids together, 1 adoption, 1 marriage. We've thrown baby showers. We've celebrated new jobs, birthdays for our kids and for one another. We've also been through some hard times, marriage troubles, financial issues, sickness, praying over cancer. It's been tough. We've had hundreds of verses read together. Hundreds of prayers prayed, hundreds of meals and girls' nights and bro breakfasts. It's really been kind of cool to see how far we've come. And you know what? In any one of those moments when we're gathered together, it doesn't feel all that special. It feels just kind of like I don't know, ordinary. Kind of like family, right? But when you look back in retrospect of what we've been through over the last 3 years, I don't think I would be the man I am today without them. So I want to encourage you, find your friends within this family. Now, you see the levels 1, 2, and 3. Grab a card on the way out, but check this out. If you are confused at all about what your next step is, some of you know exactly what your next step is, but if you are confused at all, I want to ask you not to sign up for community this week. But instead, like last weekend, I want to ask you to turn the card over and sign up for our B conversation. It's a new conversation we're hosting at this church that allows you to figure out what it looks like to belong and engage here. Basically, it's a 1-hour small group environment where you can get around a table with some other folks who are where you're at and hear from a pastor about what it looks like to engage in community and servanthood and generosity, all these things that are essential for the Jesus follower here at this church. You'll get all your information, all your questions answered, and you'll walk out of there, I promise, with a plan. So I'm encouraging you, sign up for that now. There's a group going on right now from folks who signed up last week. I think we're going to move like 70 or 80 people through it this weekend, and I hope that we move 70 or 80 more through in the coming weeks going forward. And you know what? They're during the service times, Did you notice that? On purpose. Because I know you're already going to come to church anyways, right? So I give you permission. You are pardoned. Skip the sermon and go to the B conversation. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, you are forgiven. Okay? Because I would rather have you get engaged than sit in the seat for another week. All right, with that said, closing word. I want you to pastor sum it up like this. You got to show up to grow up. You got to show up to grow up. The average American churchgoer attends church 1 out of 3 weekends. And I know if you're 1 out of 3, you're probably not engaging in deeper community. So you got to show up to grow up. Some of you have spent your entire lives church hopping and church shopping from one place to another. You're like a rock skipping on top of water, but you never sunk down deep. Hey, you got to show up to grow up. You ever met a guy who thinks like he's a great lover because he's dated 25 different girls? Okay, he is not a great level because he's only been to level 1 25 different times, and that's easy. He's never been to level 25 once. See, I've been married to the same woman for 7 years. I'm a great lover. Hey, you know what? Check this out. Can you bring the house lights up real quick? Okay. If you've been married for, let's say over 40 years in this room, will you hold your hand up for a second? Hold your hand up. And I want you to look around. Well, because with all due respect, okay, these are some great lovers. That is some great lovers. Now, check this out. You know how they got there? Was that day in and day out, year in and year out, they showed up, and now they've grown up together. You got to show up to grow up. Hey, if this church is to grow up, then you got to show up. So you know what the point is of this gathering and all the smaller gatherings? The point is to move us from me to we, to bring us together around a common intention, a common purpose, a common love, a common goal, and a common God who often gets us through life by sending us a friend or two. So this is your tribe, y'all. It's a tribe that will be there in the good times. They'll be at your wedding. They'll be at your daughter's wedding. They'll cheer you on, throw the baby showers, celebrate the new job for you, laugh and hug you when life is at its best. But it's also the tribe that will be there when life's bad and when you need prayer. They'll show up at the hospital room, deliver food at your door, drop an envelope of money in your mailbox, buy you groceries, give you fridge privileges to their house. They'll speak the last 10% when you need the last 10% and you don't want to hear the last 10%. Fight for your marriage when you can't fight for it. You know, they say it takes a village to raise kids. Well, this is your village right here. This is your tribe. If you'll have it, and it's a good tribe, if you'll have it. But we'll only have it together if we have it together, right? So my challenge for you is this, church, let's all show up. Let's all continue to show up, and we'll grow up together. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, create a spirit of connection and community in this family that the world looks at and they are envious of. And because of that, we become a magnet to the world and we become the healing for what ails the world. It's in the powerful name of Jesus we pray. Amen. Hey, I love my church. Go sign up for the B conversation and show up next week. See you there.